Hello.
Haley, it's Jim.
Hi there.
Is this a good time to talk more?
Sure.
Good.
I couldn't sleep last night because I got scared again, right?
Well,
thinking every kind of threat that I ever had from, you know, firebombing to the house to you name it will happen, so.
Yes, yes, I think
boy,
those are.
Oh boy, you know, like, there's no end to the fear that they instilled me with, because we're talking heavy hitters here. Anyway, what happened was I looked up, I found the site. It was called, hold on, let me just find it. Where it goes right into it. I'm mispronouncing the name, by the way, too. It's Permindex. I said Permindex. I'm like slurring.
Yeah, Permindex.
Permindex.
Yes.
Right. So what's so important is when I started going through with Clyde regarding this, you know, because it was Nagy, right? That's why Dick Russell was trying to come to Canada and get into the Lewis Bloomfield files. He had gotten into the archival material regarding Mark Gain. And Mark Gain was a serious journalist that I was telling you that Nelson Thal, Aka Rosenthal, right? And his father knew and worked for the Toronto Star. He was arrested, Mark Gain, by FBI for treason. That's all in the history books if you look at Mark Gain, because he was a very serious journalist who went to Russia.
How does his last name spell, Haley?
Hold on, let me try to get Dick Russell's.
No, I know. Yeah, okay. But Gain, it's Gain. G-A-I-N-E-S.
Now, hold on. The man who knew too much. Give me a second here.
Yeah, I have the book.
Yeah, hold on here. I'll just find. Holy moly. This is so serious stuff. But anyway, I got something out of Clyde. Hold on here. Oh, yeah. When I wrote to Dick Russell, I said, the man that's in your book, the Mexico City mystery man wrongly identified by the CIA as Oswald in the autumn of 63, Nagel said, are two different people, right? I said, I knew the man, so I said, those two, he just changed at times when he did the bank robberies as well. They used all kinds of disguises, slightly altering the like nose disguises.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned that from Edwin Alonzo Boyd, using a makeup kit. These are serious people that, did major changes here, there, and everywhere to do their stuff. But anyway, in his book, I said that Clyde had discussed in detail to me about Nelson Bunker Hunt, the billionaire Texas oilman H.L. Hunt.
Yeah.
And he was part of it. And he had purchased the first copy of the Zapruder film.
H.L. had, yeah, I think that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, what I said what was so important was my brother was staying in Port Perry, and he was on the property where the BP oil people were, and he was practicing using a sniper rifle on a very high area. He would climb into pine trees, and from there he would be shooting, from far distances to his target with a scope. And this is prior to the assassinations. He used to go up to this property. It was a property that he stayed at that butted the BP oil individuals. And what happened was he stayed there for, as I remember, almost a year he was there, maybe longer, in the Port Perry area with a station wagon. And he took me back and forth up there because I met the owners. I actually went into the BP property by accident with my mother, sister, and my boyfriend at that time as well. When I told Clyde that story, all of a sudden this, you know, this was serious pictures again that were destroyed, that I was on the property because it showed me on these little falls. So I'm trying to remember exactly who's in the picture. I think I took it of my sister and my boyfriend at that time. Now, the boyfriend mysteriously disappeared as well. And a rumor that lived when we lived at 54 Brownlow, he was a golfer. His name was Bob Kitchen, had a set of golf clubs. He was a up-and-coming golf pro, or tried to be one. His golf clubs went missing, and he went missing. So I would say they might have never found his body, or he could be part of the cadavers that the coroner of Ontario has right now to be identified.
Why would they have taken him or your boyfriend out?
Who, the boyfriend?
Yeah.
Because the boyfriend was working with my brother in doing constructions of cottages. He got to know my brother at depth because he became my brother's friend for quite some quite a period of time as well. So in Clyde mentioning, there's the picture. It's in Dick Russell's book with the Civil Air Patrol, and you see the full picture there, and you see Tobinski.
Let me grab the book. Hang on a second.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I got it now.
Okay, there are serious players in this book. This is why it's so important. The picture of the Civil Air Patrol, it's in an entirety right at the bottom there. You see Oswald at the far right, then Tobinski.
Hang on, I'm looking for it in the photo section.
Yeah. The one we went over yesterday.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be in the photo section. It must be earlier on.
It's in The Man Who Knew Too Much, right?
Yeah. But it's got a photo section, and that photo I didn't see in the photo section. Did I miss it? Do you have the book right there?
No. Like, okay, let's go over go to the photo section.
Right.
There's only this one photo section, okay?
Right.
Has Kennedy's picture first.
Right.
Okay, next page it has Richard Case Nagel,
right,
handcuffed and being led.
Right.
Serious stuff that Clyde told me. He said that Tobinski was paid by Nagel in Mexico City, part of the money
for going to the embassy.
Yeah, to go to Cuba. And
Cuban embassy, yeah.
Cuban embassy, and then, you know, he knew, this Nagel guy knew about the takedown of John Kennedy is happening. Then you see Jim, the detective there with the spy, Nagel had a Minolta spy camera.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see Oswald with the fist. Oh, by the way, I'm going to send you a picture that even Judith Ferry Baker doesn't have.
Okay.
I took Judith Ferry Baker with that particular picture made on a cake in the Conspiracy Culture bookstore with her just in the cake cutting I thought she'd love that as a as a souvenir, because she didn't. She probably doesn't even have the pictures that people were taking of her at that time, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's the Nagel in El Paso police lineup, September 20th, 1960.
Yeah, how can he get away with tilting his head down like that? That's ridiculous.
Who?
Nagel.
Oh,
he's got
Nagel?
His head tilted down. I mean, how can you do that
in
a lineup?
Yeah, and this is in a police lineup.
How ridiculous is that?
That's right. I mean, we're talking about major situation happening here. So Nagel's passport issued to him by the East German authorities at the summer. Then Nagel's military card. Like I told you, I saw Charles Frederick Rogers' naval intelligence picture,
right.
which
right.
is on the internet, and we'll bring that all up. Nagel, as he looked while working for military intelligence in Tokyo, so that would clue him into knowing Oswald. Because of Oswald had gone into Tokyo regarding the powers, to be brought out. So he was in the same intelligence group. And then you have Bernard Festerwall Jr. Then you have Marina Oswald, Nagel's two children, Nagel's military card, which I said. Then Fair Play for Cuba, Nagel's... notebook, which was seized September 20th, 1960, then photocopies of Oswald's security card sent to Nagel by Arthur Greenstein. Isn't that interesting, right?
Yeah.
Oswald informed services identification card seized by Dallas police after the assassination. Note the Department of Defense overstamp. Interesting, right? Overstamped. Nagel military ID card, another Oswald uniformed service ID card, which was in Nagel's possession. So these two guys knew each other, Oswald and Nagel.
That's very strange.
Then you have
that. Yeah.
That's right. Arthur Greenstein, pictured at a party in 1990, befriended by Nagel in Mexico City in the autumn of 62. Greenstein later became the recipient of many Nagel letters from prison about the assassination. I got to tell you, these guys had to know everything. That's why Nelson Thal got involved with this business constantly. They had to know every move you were making. That's why Nelson wanted to know every move, and says, I'm going to be your agent. I said, like, hell you are, right? What are you, my handler or something here? Because they don't want this information coming out, the players. Anyway, Nagel, as he appeared in his younger military years before the near-fatal 1954 plane crash, above there is Robert Clayton Buick, 1990, in a bullfight in Mexico City during the early 60s. Buick said he worked for U.S. intelligence shadowing
right.
Nagel Oswald. There, you see? You can see the link there. Oh, I'm losing my voice. Let me just get my coffee. Anyway, the next page says George and Jean Dumont-Shield, I said it right, who befriended the Oswalds. That's the lady that I saw at my dad's place. That's the lady
right.
I met.
Right.
I can identify her,
right?
Right. Here's Mark Gain. That's the one that Richard or Dick Russell came to look for his archival material, which is in the University of Toronto. Mark Gain, G-A-Y-N, a Canadian foreign correspondent who Nagel alleged was a Soviet agent. That's
yeah.
where the information regarding the secret nuclear plant in Israel in the Negev Desert comes all about. What the hell was this Soviet agent? Then he used the name of alias Joseph Kramer, as Nagel used when he warned the FBI of a JFK assassination plot. So Nagel knew about it. Clyde told me he knew about it. He paid Walter Chabinsky off a bit of the money to keep him alive and going, right? That was in the newspapers. I found that all out. Then it has Desmond Fitzgerald, chief of the CIA Far Eastern Division in the 50s, the head of the Cuban Task Force. Nagel says he warned of the Oswald plot. James Angleton in charge of the CIA's counterintelligence until his dismissal in 1974. On the right hand side of that page, said Winston Scott, CIA station chief in Mexico City, John Paisley, high-ranking CIA research analyst and possible KGB mole. Huh? I mean, this is serious business here. Tracy Barnes, chief of the CIA Domestic Operations Division, alleged by Robert Morrow to have early knowledge of Oswald's activities. David Phillips, head of the clandestine activities. Then Cuban Affairs for the CIA Mexico City, 1962 to 63. Now, yesterday was interesting. Before we did all this, I see on the news it was the 50th anniversary of the Bay of Pigs thwarted invasion, right? That didn't really go anywhere. That didn't have backup, right?
Sure.
Right, Antonio, then on the next page, leader of the Alpha 66 Cuban Exile Organization, says he met Oswald in the presence of Maurice Bishop.
Then Maurice Bishop was another name used by David Attlee Phillips.
Right. So then you have Cuban Premier Fidel Castro. Then you have Roland Master for El Tigre, Cuban exile leader. Then you have the guy that got the axe. The member I told you, Davinsky, said he put an axe in this woman by the name of Dirksen's forehead, and she had a hardware shop at 666 Young Street. Oh, my voice is gone from yesterday. So he was eradicated, this El Dio del Valle, Cuban exile leader alleged involved in the assassination plot, the same day that Ferry was killed. These are players, heavy players that started. Coming up in the garrison's court cases, so they had to be eradicated, right? So Oswald passing out fair play for Cuba leaflets. Notice the Hispanic men never identified in Oswald's company. And then you have Guy Bannister. All of those pictures should be analyzed as well, who they are. Who are these individuals, right? Then you have Carlos, Bringer. Then you have Ferry at the top there with his system, as Clyde calls it, his toupee.
What did Clyde call his toupee?
A system. That's why when I was thinking to, do my book, I was thinking, what do I call it? The system? The system, because I thought, oh, that's perfect. The hair pieces, the whole thing, it's a system. And then I thought, I thought to myself so many times, what am I going to call my book to reveal everything? And then, the guy that I spoke to, Robert Galen Ross, said, no, Haley, that's the perfect name. The Cleaning Lady and the Cleaner. It'll sell books big time, because that's what I came up with, right? I go into Clyde's house as a cleaning lady. He calls himself the Cleaner, because that's what he does. He cleans up any assassination. Everyone else, becoming a witness, they addressed me and told me, the son Paul and Clyde, that they're cleaners, and if I say anything, I will be eradicated, because they're the biggest cleaners of all. Anyway, there you see the Sergio Arcata Smith, Cuban exile, who Nagel said was a proliferal character in the JFK assassination. And then you have the 16-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald, far right, seen here at the meeting of the Civil Air Patrol with squadron leader David Ferry.
Where?
Right underneath the David Ferry picture.
No. I don't have it. It's not in this copy of the book.
You're kidding.
No, I'm serious.
You're serious?
Yeah, I got okay, Carlos Marcello.
On the next page after the Guy Bannister, maybe it fell out because it's a. Anyway, then the, after
it didn't
Guy
fall
Bannister,
out. It was. It's not in this book.
Okay. Do you have the millionaire?
Let me see let me see what edition. See, they must have taken it out. It must have been too revealing. Hot. I've got 1990.
One I've got is revised and updated copy.
Okay, well, I've got 1992. That's why it is. I got the original, and you've got a later copy that includes that photograph.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me look at the front here. It was printed 1992 by Dick Grissom, copyright. Updated, introduction.
Yeah, see, I don't have updated. I don't have updated.
Okay, that's why you don't have it.
Yeah.
All right, it has Ferry's picture, and then it has that same photograph we went through.
Yeah, but no, we're below Ferry's.
But anyway, I found it in it's either in the Search for Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, yeah.
Or the, anyway, it says Texas Oilman H.L. Hunt, then it
right.
has the Nelson Bunker Hunt, then it
right.
has the picture of the David Attlee Phillips.
No, it's got, Joseph Miltier.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, then you have the Larry Schmidt, founder of the Conservatism USA, alleged accomplice of Oswald.
Yeah, above
Walker.
That I have Charles Willoughby and Major General Walker.
That's it. Now, Clyde told me he was trying to take out Walker, not Oswald. He.
How could he miss? How could he have missed him? It was a stationary target. It was a short distance.
It was made to only intimidate the bastard, Clyde said.
Yeah, it was a deliberate miss, yeah.
A deliberate miss suit. Like, I'm wondering if...
And it was with, a .30-06, maybe?
Yeah.
It wasn't a Mandic or Carcano.
No.
So it's always been ridiculous.
Certainly not. No one shot that piece of shit off.
Right.
I mean, I can't believe it when Jesse Ventura... was trying to do it, and then when he did his show, I thought perfect words coming out of Jesse Ventura. This Manlicher Carcano is a piece of shit.
You know, I set that up for him, Haley.
Yeah, well, I want him to hear about this.
Yeah, but I mean, I was the one who set up that shooting sequence with the stationary targets, bales of hay, the distances, the angles. I set all that up for him.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah.
So he knew.
And I timed it.
I love that because I thought, oh, I can't believe it that they're trying to shoot that piece of
right.
shit,
Haley, let me tell you.
Let
me tell you how bad it is. We did three replications of three shots each. And out
You're
of the
kidding.
Nine shots, none of which could be fired in the time sequence. I think the quickest was 8.4 and up.
Right.
One as long as 11, I think. He got one hit out of nine shots.
Well, anyway, what was so terrible, like when I finally got to the Toronto police there to please help me as a child, right? And this was prior to the assassination. This was right at the time, there that it hit the pages in 59 where... My brother and Clyde, right, had serious hardware stored in my brother's room. They were Enfields, they were Mausers, there was all kinds of heavy guns, that were, they were gun running at that young age there in 1959. That would make me, born in 46, what would that make me there?
46 to 59? 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
12, right. Clyde is
13.
In 43. How old is Clyde now? He's born in 43.
He's 69 or 70.
Yeah, but what did it make at that time when I got those that hardware out that they were dealing with his heavy weaponry already?
You mean 56?
Give me a pencil here.
He would have been 30.
Yeah, he's 43, and that was 59 when I got in there. Trying to stop this
if he
whole
was 59,
thing.
He was very young.
He was only about
16 or 17.
Exactly. So when the assassination happened, right?
Yeah.
That's 1963, and Clyde's born. He's just.
So he's about 20, 19 or 20.
20. Right,
or,
and they knew Oswald, who was slightly older.
Right.
And my brother was then 19. So these were kids at their prime. You know, that had no shaking of the hands. They were, you know, like
right.
pumped up on adrenaline. They knew how to do it because they were taught by the you know, a skilled marksman,
right.
Walter Tobinski, who was there. You know, I say that this, yeah, okay, you don't have that picture of Walter Tobinski. Okay, wait a minute.
Well, turn the page.
That's a serious picture you've got to put up there.
We got the two Mexico City pictures that the Nagel says are two different people, but they could both be Walter.
No, they're not. They're one and the same.
Yeah, it's both. Those are both Walter.
I knew the man.
Those are both Walter.
Now, he might have altered it slightly, but when you will see the furrows, what he has very distinctive, heavy furrows on the forehead.
Yeah.
And he has a chin and that same hairline recessing and a bald spot on the back of the top of the forehead. See, both have the same. So they're alleging that the guy is two separate guys. He isn't. It's just a different angle. And what he would do, he said if they were near of any camera, they would grimace. They would make different faces.
Right.
Because they knew. And that's the same thing that he taught. He actually said that in front of his son. Now, if you're doing a bank robbery, you make a weird face right in
yeah.
front of the camera. Make
distort
sure
your face,
can't.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, holy mackerel. I mean, the one time I had to laugh, the youngest there, Alfred, started crying, "Dad, you're so cheap, you won't even buy me a Halloween mask or a costume of some kind so I can go to school." I said, "Look, you can become very inventive. Here, I'll make your dad look into Osama bin Laden. Presto, Majo." I took a sheet. Put a you know, part of the sheet. I took the sheet from home. I said, "Look, I'll just bring an old white sheet that is already falling apart and has the holes, and I'll just you know, cut it up." So he put it as I showed how the Arabs, you know, have it as a sort of you know, when they're in the desert there, and then I did a turban for him, and then Clyde went to his his makeup kit, put darker skin tone pancake makeup so he'd have more of a darker skin, like an Arab.
Sure.
And then he said, let's see how this works. So he stood in front of the window, this is at 2494 Callum in Mississauga, and he started bowing down as kids were coming to the front door. On Halloween day, and see how it works. All the kids were saying, "Hee hee hee! Oh look, Osama bin Laden is in the window."
I love it.
I had a laugh that day. Holy moly! Even I got a crack out of that. You know, serious kid all the time crying that he wants this, he wants that. Clyde would all the time get these kids to do major hits with him on the pretext he's going to give them something. Alfred, he was going to get a major, Serios system, the German make that cost almost 50,000. It's Von Olsen? No, I'll get the proper name. Anyway, he would promise the kid something like that for that he would keep his mouth shut. Never happened. He finally didn't even give him a secondhand, you know, cheap TV set. But anyway, once he got the youngest son into the clutches there, of the camisos, the youngest son started working as a, restocking clerk in one of the camiso grocery stores. And after he had done a hit from being just a stocking clerk, Alfred, he became a manager at the age of 17 for the camiso. So he became a made man. They upped him in the ranks. So the kid had to learn on his own to start taking, buying his own stuff, not demanding That's why that day when I was
Haley.
Charge it up. Hold on here. Let me just put the wire in my phone here. Give me a second, please.
Yeah, sure.
Are you there?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, now the main thing when I found the I Have Some Secrets for You by Maurice Phillips, it's a major blog that I found by going and researching this Permendex link right to the Frederick Nagy, the CIA man, because this was the key person, this Nagy guy, right? Now, the players, because I was trying to say, you stupid idiot, you never even, and Tabinsky never went up the map of, other than Nagy, who you met with, who the players were. And the top of the, running of it, it goes to the Rothschild family, and it's all in this one piece. It's called Some Secrets for You, blogspot.ca. Some Secrets for You is all one word, dot, and then blogspot.ca. And there's a book that comes out. So it shows serious people here meeting, right, where it has, in 1943, after the war, Frendick, how would you pronounce his first name? F-E-R-E-N-C?
F-E-R-E-N-C.
Frederick Nagy was elected Prime Minister of Hungary in this country, first democratic election. At the same time, he also acted as a Hungarian Minister of Defense opposed to communism. He was forced to resign his position after his five-year-old son was kidnapped, and he immigrated to the United States shortly after his arrival in the U.S. Nagy wrote
Hang on, Haley, one second.
This is serious stuff. I mean, this is like big players here. It's up, you know.
Oh.
Anyway, it comes out, Oswald Connection. Remember I told you that there's a picture that a customs agent took, and he gave a description, vividly of Clyde and Oswald and my brother. And it's a book called Le Dallas à Montréal by Maurice Phillips. Le Dallas à Montréal.
Yeah, you're taking off.
There's a connection here. What's the Montreal-Dallas connection?
I got you back. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, did you hear what I was saying about the Montreal connection?
No, I missed part of that, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, Le Dallas à Montréal. It was written by Maurice Philippe. And
yeah,
it's all in French, and it's probably translated somewhere. But in this piece, this is where I found the a customs agent had written a serious letter, which is in the archivial material there on the JFK assassination, about Oswald's connection to Montreal. So there's a custom agent who had seen Oswald and described Oswald, my brother, and Clyde, and a woman who I say is Jean de Morenchild.
Yeah.
Because she had a very peculiar walk, and I don't forget that walk as well. You know when some things are ingrained in your brain?
Yes.
Well, these are things that were never left because of my always being on such a, you know. Anyway, the whole thing is Permindex and who ran it, but up the whole network of who ran it comes to the Rothschild family.
Go ahead.
Because I heard about this Permindex way back when, I said the first time, just before the assassination. So it's in the archival material regarding the MaryFarrell.org.
Mary Farrell, yeah.
Yeah, so
Mary
all
Farrell
of the stuff
archives,
is in there.
Yeah.
And you'll see that it goes right up the chain to the Rothschilds that run. So when Clyde used to start yelling at me, because he would talk about the Israeli and Meyer Lansky. And I said, what the hell would you want the friggin' Meyer Lansky to get back into Cuba for? And he could set up his casinos again. Are you working for the, the Jewish mob or the Italian mob? He always called himself a free agent. He works for nobody, right? Free agent, floating agent. I says, well, you guys are nuts because the top of the chain, the food chain here is the Rothschild family that ran this Permindex. And it all came out in this piece here. This piece is a serious piece of archival material. I have some secrets for you, blogspot.ca. Don't ever lose it. Download it. Heavy, heavy piece, because it's got the Nagy in there. It's got everyone, all the players. It's got the, Clay Shaw. This started coming out. This is why they had to shut up David Ferry and the Cuban there. One after another, everyone that was coming before any kind of hearing or the Garrison's court case.
Yes.
Against Clay Shaw, they should have gone right to the top. Right to the top, not the middle players.
I don't think he had enough information to know who was at the top.
Right. That's why they started compromising his investigation.
Yeah, it was infiltrated, and then they had all these hacks and shills
right.
were attacking him from the outside.
That's why I say there's a finger in the pie with Nelson Thal and this Ralph Schoeneman. Stuck his face right into Garrison there as being one of the investigators. That's where it was compromised.
Ralph Schoeneman. Yeah, what was Ralph Schoeneman's role here?
Ralph Schoeneman was a compromising bastard, as far as I'm concerned. He tried to, if you just put his name in the WikiLeaks, let me just put this Ralph Schoeneman.
You mean a Wikipedia?
Now, download the entire Some Secrets for You blog spots, because I'm going to bring you the pictures, and I'm going to put the, you've got to put the full picture of the Civil Air Patrol, that one up, because it's in one of the books there, without Tabinsky being right in the middle there with his face on one side and the other. So download that whole thing, and then anything you find of Mary, www.maryfarrell.org.
Mary Farrell, yeah.
Farrell, right. Everything. That's so important, that whole piece. Anyway, let me just try to get the Ralph. Let me put the Schoeneman S. I've got his business card. Because Nelson wanted me to take him around.
He wanted you to take Schoeneman around?
Yeah, well, he came here to Toronto, and that's how I met Ralph Schoeneman. And I also interviewed him when I did the Agent Ladybug Spy Man show. I interviewed you. I interviewed, I don't know how many people. So many people, I can't even remember. What I did is I listened to all the people on Coast to Coast and interviewed the better people. Then I had this brilliant idea. I thought, oh, the people that are coming for the 9/11, I'm going to find all the people that were the presenters there and interview them. That's very important, I said, for historical purposes. Then I wanted to get the archives from Spy Man, and he never gave me one. He was starting to get Clyde to come and kill me as well, because I'm sure, everyone wants to rule the world, and I've had it with this. I do stuff. Like, I was the person who brought in all of the interviewed individuals, right? not spy men. Every single person, whether it was the David Hawkins and the pilot there. They had the Hawks Cafe. Now they have a different blog spot.
Tell me about Hawks Cafe.
Oh, yeah. This is what was so important. Let me try to just get this first to Ralph Schoeneman before we let it through. The Hawks Cafe was so dynamite because what happened is he went on coast to coast, the pilot and Hawks, and
You're talking about McConnell.
They went on live to try to say who did 9/11. And all of a sudden, the whole show was cut off live because it went on live for 15 minutes. And I thought sometimes in the middle of the night when I would be listening to Coast to Coast, I fell asleep. And I thought, how the hell did it stop? Did I fall asleep? Was this a mirage or whatever? Anyway, I went on Coast to Coast archival just to find who the presenter's name was. Quickly emailed David Hawkins, I guess it is, right? And I emailed him, I would like to do the interview with you because I want to hear the story, for God's sakes. It's very important here. So what I did was I started running from phone booth to phone booth, and we got 4 hours that were put into the archivio under Spyman, and then he downloaded the pod and put it here and there and everywhere. So there's, I think, 6 hours of me asking the questions of David Hawkins and the pilot. Hold on, let me just...
Mitch McConnell.
Sorry?
McConnell, isn't it?
Say the name again?
McConnell.
Yeah, that's it.
It's Mitch McConnell.
Right. He has like a nickname, and he has a blog spot.
And he, who were the people at Hawks Cafe going to identify as responsible for 9/11?
Everyone there, from the government on. And he actually had the courage to go into, I think it was in North Dakota or South Dakota, the pilot, and then put in the whole case that he had filed as the people who made money with the short selling of the put options and on and on. So he named all the people that were involved. It's on a blog spot. I'll find for you. They tried to eradicate that blog spot, right, so no one would know about it. Hold on here, and I'll try to find that as well. Because there's no more Hawks Cafe. It's under a different. But I think it's still floating around my interview, because it was done within a week, and I was in the...
But you think the people at Hawks Cafe were on the up and up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because what he told me was he knew about, he actually started, saying Clyde's name, but he slightly changed it because he was fearful for his life, too, because Clyde... He says, we have serious murder for hire people here that all are involved as well on all these cases and stuff for a reason that they're protected, because it's been compromised way, way back when. Okay, let me just try.
But Clyde, of course, didn't have anything to do with 9/11.
No. No, but the serious part of it was the mob in New Jersey were. And then he started showing me about
the mob in
anthrax. The anthrax, and about the very seriously sent mysterious letters that showed up with the anthrax. That he started talking to me about.
That came from New Jersey mobsters?
Yeah.
Really, the anthrax attacks on Senator Leahy
that's
Tom
why
Daschle?
When I started getting into the anthrax part of it with Clyde, and then also with my physically seeing the head of Italy, Anthony Camiso, meeting with two of the America's most wanted terrorist guys. They were meeting right here, and then the Ontario General of or the Attorney General of Ontario, told them to get out of Dodge.
Who were the two he was meeting with? You know the names.
I've got their photographs. They were on America's Most Wanted terrorist list.
Okay.
And I saw these guys, and there was a link that they wanted to do a plot, and they were going to go into Manhattan and use the super frac. The super frac, if you go in, download that super frac. I'll spell it for you. Let me get into the super frac, because this is heavy stuff. It's manufactured. Clyde took me to where it's manufactured. It's on Steeles Avenue. Super frac has so many names. And this is the takeout material. They have put the super frac everywhere. It's this plastic explosive.
Yeah, I got a whole page about super frac.
Right.
Apparently it's used in fracking. You know, to dislodge geological strata to determine whether there's any oil deposits there. It does great damage to the geology, including contaminate water wells and aquifers that have been providing pure water sources for communities for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. And this fracking is destroying the water and polluting it and causing communities to dry up.
Okay, this is now, you put super frac, SUPERFRAC, and then what I did to find out after Clyde showed me where the dam place was, you put Steeles, STEELES Avenue. And up pops trademarks. Super frac trademarks. Here, I'll give you it. It says super frac, TRADE dot marks, MAR dot.
One second, Haley.
And where Clyde showed me where he got the super frac, the stuff that was in that plane, right, in John Jr.'s plane was the super frac that he got from this company called Orca Explosives Technology on Steeles Avenue on Concord or Vaughan, whatever you want. It's at 2600 Steeles Avenue, right in, a Wattville. Never mind, it's Vaughan or whatever. This is the serious area where you have heavy organized crime. They run the whole thing.
Why was the mob sending anthrax to two United States senators when they wanted to hold hearings on the Patriot Act? How did they get involved in that?
Well, they seem to want to get involved in wounding individuals in high positions and getting this anthrax that can do heavy damage. That's why it was sent to the from journalists to senators. I don't know how many people got these things.
Yeah, but these were, Haley, these were people, these were senators who wanted to hold hearings on the Patriot Act. And it
right.
appears that the sending of the anthrax was to intimidate them to not hold hearings. And
that's
I'm just
right.
wondering why the mob would have been interested in having the Patriot Act go through, or were they paid for by the CIA to do this?
No, they were paid by the looks of by the CIA or whatever to do it, because they needed to shut down this whole... By doing the Patriot Act, it would have stopped it or stopped any kind of attack. because it would take the rights of the American citizen away by this Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And they tried to do the same thing here in the Canadian government by shutting down and to do almost like a martial law.
Yes.
Situation. So that's what they were gearing for, and that's why this anthrax. Now, I was really amazed when he started talking to me about this anthrax business, and it all came with this letter that he had written that accompanied the, you know, the damn, what do you call it, flashlight with the super frack in it. Holy mackerel. And he said, well, whoever wrote this, you know, anthrax letter, you know, that was a serious person who thought very, very, you know, diligently on how to set up that it was the Arabs who sent it. He says to me like that, right?
So do you think, did Clyde have anything to do with writing,
could
though?
Could possibly be because of what he started, the way he started laughing that day, and I thought, holy shit, he's, you know, he's writing letters here that were sent in New Jersey. It's almost like the same thing when the ordering of the Mannlicher Carcano was.
Yeah.
It was, you know, you know, so I was understanding exactly where this whole thing was that, because I had seen the history of it, right? So if you look into a Superfrac trademark or whatever, it has the Steeles Avenue address there. Now, it's Orca. Let me just put this Orca explosives. And then when you get into the pages of them, Orca is spelled O-R-I-C-A, explosives.
Is this where Clyde got the Superfrac?
Yeah, that's just right. You can walk.
Is it Orca Explosives? It's not Orca Explosives.
Technology, right?
But not USA. It's Orca Explosives Technology, and it's in Canada.
Right, but now it's global. It's all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah, and hold on here. Orca Canada, Calgary, Orca Superfrac Explosives Limited, Orca Sudbury, Orca Calgary, Orca Canada, Orca World. I found this whole thing, downloaded Dynamite in Toronto, Yellow Pages. Find local businesses in the Yellow Pages. Get that.
Yeah.
Dynamite in Toronto. yellowpages.ca, find local businesses, www.yellowpages, how you can get, if you want to blow up something real big, Orca Canada Inc.
Orca Canada Inc.?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's everywhere. I mean, they've put it. Now, imagine if they start making these you know, using the technology of this plastic explosives into any kind of item that's not just, you know, in a plastic, like this item in the shoe, but actual an item that can't be scanned. If they can't scan the properties of
explosives.
Of explosives, you ain't got a hope in hell to stop a major attack anywhere at any time. Orca explosives. It's worldwide. Now, what I found was, hold on, I put it in my favorites here under Superfrac. I'll go in there so I'll find it for you as well here. This is serious stuff, this super frack. This is where the planes come in, where they had actually put the super frack constantly into areas that, like into planes way back when.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Orca Mining Services. Yeah, here's the one that I wanted to. Trademarks, you get it. It's a Elasti Plus Patch. And then it has one name after another. It's in the United States under KOCH Enterprises, Inc., 4111 East 37th Street North, Wichita, Kansas. And they've got the same superfrac. They've changed the names of it. It has United States Patent Trademark Office. And they've got highways with lines or dividers. Imagine if they've put the superfrac and they want to blow up something real big, and it's already put, I say, in the lining or, you know, within the construction of every single building, so that when the implosion happens, it's already been built with the imploding device being in there.
How long has superfrac been around?
It has to be looked at when this patent was presented to the government, this Elastiplast to Wichita. And it has the registration number. It says here 1998. That's the date here.
1998. 1998.
Right.
So could it have been used in the trade Twin Towers?
Possibly, totally. At what point did they close down, you know, to do renovations? Because after they had the situation with the, the basement being, when there was an attack there in the basement, right?
1993.
Right, and what happened was the building already, the structural holding the entire building was compromised. So here was this Larry Silverstein having to figure out, well, how the hell, you know, this building is not safe. We got problems with asbestos. We got problems with all these things. I need to, get a whole new deal done with Lloyd's of London in case of attack, that we get a payout here. So 6 months before the 9/11 goes down, he gets this deal, and actually wanted to claim for two separate buildings, but he only got the one paid out for the one building from Lloyd's of London, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get a two-for-one. I said to Clyde, I had to laugh, hey, Larry Silverstein wanted a two-for-one pizza as well with Lloyd's of London, didn't he, eh, Way?
That was what Clyde said, yeah.
No, I said to him about the two-for-one. The cops used to always say, who said the two-for-one pizza? I said, I came up with the thing when he said, yeah, Haley, was like, when you have a cancer, you have to take the tumors out. Holy moly. So anyway, I couldn't believe it. So it's under so many different names, and it's all around the world. So this is, like, no one understands this is very, very important. Orca Mining Services. It's in so many offices. I found the Orca, just ORICA, Mining Services Worldwide. And then you see it's in Australia and Fiji and India and Japan and Malaysia and New Caledonia, Papua New Guinea, Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, China, Hong Kong. Then it has Europe. And they all have their own names. So there's a song called Super Freak. You might as well sing Super Frack.
Yeah, sure.
That's the heavy stuff. I mean, where does this stuff come out of my head? He tells me key, important material. You know, serious evidence by saying certain names, which I've researched, where he's coming from. Where'd you get the explosives from? Where did you get the explosives? Where'd you get the super frac? He showed me what it looked like. He had it in his house. So I said, holy shit, you mean you can waltz in into the super frac? Yeah, well, the mob runs it. Really? Holy shit. I almost died, finding that out. But anyway, when you see the Koch Enterprises also, then you'll see it's under K-Koch hyphen glitch, Koch Enterprises, Inc., Auto York Division, Koch Engineering Company, Inc., Auto York Division, Koch Engineering Company, Inc. This is a serious piece that people that are doing the 9/11 have to look at and see what exactly is this Koch and, you know, this carbon chemicals and liquid. They've made this into mesh. They've made it into synthetic fiber material. They could put it into, you know, all kinds of items that you just put in your luggage. Can they smell it? Can they see it? Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, of course.
Technology that's evolving as we speak.
Yeah, of course.
So, like, I couldn't believe the serious stuff that he gave to me all the time. And that's why if somebody wanted to brush me off, they couldn't. But, you know, I couldn't believe that he actually went forth, and I kept wondering, how are they coming along? Yeah, David Hawkins.
Haley, I got something I got to take care of. How about I call you back in an hour?
Okay, I'm going to, I haven't even had a coffee yet.
Well, you get your coffee and relax.
Then I'll go through with the key thing of who this Permindex is.
Yeah,
this
perfect.
Is the key to the whole thing. Somebody should have arrested the Rothschild banking cartel day one. Anyway, and that's why Clyde used to always laugh, now I'm protected from the highest. Friggin' hell. You know, the key thing was Kennedy wanted printed the money for the U.S. of A individual people, not the Rothschilds anymore. Anyway, call me back.
I will. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.